Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. It's good to be back, Tim. Back from vacation. Feels good. It feels good to get excited again. You know what I mean? Sometimes things get monotonous. You get used to things the way they are, and it loses its luster. But I'm excited. I'm good to be back. How are you, Tim?
I'm back on. It's good. It's good to see your face. You've aged a little bit since the last time I've seen you. Maybe that's the woods. That's the cabins out there. How was your camping trip?
Age? Do you honestly think I look older?
No. I've been sitting on that joke for like 3 days. Am I waiting to say it?
And you killed it. It really landed. No, I feel good. It was a good trip. We didn't do a cabin. We did a tent. We brought our tent with us. And it was fun. The first real tenting vacation we've ever done. I've set the tent up, you know, for a couple days here and there just for fun, for giggles. But this was the first one where it was like, we're going for 6 days. We're going to set the tent up and that this is our spot. But it was good. I brought a barbecue. I broke down at the last second and brought my air conditioner, my standalone air conditioner, because it was going to be warm. And so we had some creature comforts camping, and it was worthwhile. But it was a lot of fun. You look at me like I'm crazy. I brought an air conditioner. That's normal.
You brought an air conditioner to the woods?
Yeah. Well, it was a campsite.
Okay.
So it wasn't the woods. It was a campsite. A funny story, when we got there, we pulled in. My wife is such a lover to death, but goodness gracious, we're trying to get out the door. It's a 9-hour drive. And she's just like dragging her feet. And we're at church and she's doing something. And like, we have to go. We have a 9-hour drive, which is going to turn into 11 hours with lunch and everything. It was Father's Day. They wanted to do something. We didn't get out of there until like 1 o'clock. And then we lose an hour going because we gain an hour, excuse me. But anyways, it's a beautiful day. We drive there. Everything's great. We're going through the UP Upper Peninsula. We pull into La Crosse, Wisconsin. And it just starts thunderstorming, Tim. Like, I'm talking torrential downpour coming down. The raindrops are the size of my fist. Like, they're huge. And I'm like, I got to set up a tent. It's 12:15 in the morning. I don't know where we are. And I got to set a tent up right now. And so I almost kind of just caved and got a hotel, but I didn't. We got to the campsite, couldn't find our campground. No one was there, obviously. There's just RVs everywhere. I have this tent. I'm like, what? Am I in the wrong spot? What's going on? So finally, I just said, screw it. I just set up camp on a piece of flat ground. I'm like, I don't know where we are. I know we're not on my site because there's an RV sitting in my site, campsite 108. I thought it was my site, but there's someone there. And so I just put my tent down in site 203, 204, and 20. I took up three sites. I'm like, screw it. Like, I have to put my tent down. My kids are tired. It's raining. I got to do it. But it was crazy. Anyways, we woke up the next morning. Tent was a mess. I had to reset it up. I just went to the front desk. I said, this is where we're at. Like, you guys made a mistake. I'm staying here. This is what's happening. And so they were pretty cool about it. They said, as long as you're gone by Friday, which we were. And it worked out great. Good site. Good time. Kids loved it. I loved it. We're going to do it again next year. Camping is fun. It was a lot of fun.
What'd you guys do all day?
The kids were doing a camp there. And so we signed them. My wife's really into singing. And so they were doing a singing camp. You ever do that? You probably sang quite a bit as a kid.
Never sang. Don't have the voice. No.
That's interesting. I pegged you for like one of those guys. But anyways, that wasn't an insult. You just seem like a singer. So they would do that all day. Then after, we would go and do stuff. We found like a community pool where we went swimming twice. We went to Minneapolis, my old stomping grounds with the Wild. So we toured around there. We went to the XL Energy Center. My favorite restaurant is across the street, Casetas. We did that, showed them all kind of the places we used to live. My first condo was there, the Skyscape building. So fun stuff like that. So nothing too crazy, nothing too adventurous, but it was a good trip. The kids had a good time. I had a good time. Lots of driving, but what are you going to do? Anyways, moving on. We've missed a lot, Tim, since we've been gone. There's been a lot of stuff happening. But before I get to that, I want to talk about yard work. So I recently moved recently. It's been a couple years since we sold our house and moved to our new property. I made the mistake of going and seeing my old house before I left. I had my oldest daughter with me, and she was like, I want to check it out. I want to check it out. We drive by it every day. We literally sold our house and bought a chunk of land a mile up the road. So we drive by my street that we used to live on multiple times a day, and I've never gone in. And she's like, let's go check it out. Let's go check it out. Because I've heard rumblings that they aren't keeping up with the yard work and things have changed and this and that. But I wanted to see it because I spent, no kidding, hundreds of hours on that yard. Mulch, mowing, flowers, trees. It was a massive yard. Like, I'm massive. I used to do 20 yards of mulch every spring. And that's a big amount, if you know mulch, just for a house.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And so I would do that every year, keep up with it. There's a lot of upkeep. And I took pride in that. It was a nice yard. I tell you, just a disappointment in my eyes when I came around the corner and I saw just the disarray of my former yard. It was just disgusting. And I know the people who bought the house. I've met them a few times. It's just young couple from California. And I was trying hard not to get angry, but it's indicative of today's youth in general. There's zero work ethic, zero pride in where they live. I would be embarrassed if I lived there. But these are just millionaires from California, bought this house. They don't care. And I immediately thought of hockey. I'm like, this is the problem with the kids today. They don't take pride in their team. They don't take ownership in their team. There's a reason certain teams don't win, and it's because they don't take pride in their team. They don't have any kind of stake with their team. They're just in it for themselves. They're in it for the name on the back, not the crest on the front. And it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. So anyways, I was just disappointed. And if you're a GM, if you're an owner, and you have a player who goes against that trend, who bucks that trend, you hold on to that player. You hold on to that player for as long as you can, Tim, for as long as you can. But if you have a player who maybe falls under that category, someone who just doesn't really care about the crest on the front, more about the stats and the name on the back, get rid of that player. And we'll talk about a few of these players this show, because there's some player movement. There's some trade rumblings that could potentially happen. And it's interesting to see where teams place value and where maybe they should place value. And I think it's becoming a real thing now. That it's almost tangible, where you can feel it, of this is a team guy. 20 years ago, everybody was a team guy. There was no real selfish players. Maybe the odd one here and there, but it seems to be more going in the direction of, I'm going to worry about myself first and make sure I get my cookies. And I saw when I played, we'd win 5-2, 6-1. Guys would be pissed off in the locker room because they didn't get an assist, or he didn't pass it to him, or this and that. Whereas it's like, we just won. You should be excited. The team won. Just because you didn't get your assist or your goal or this and that, you're upset. Like, there's something wrong here. Are you in it for yourself, or are you in it for the team? So I think it's becoming a real tangible thing now, Tim.
Is it necessarily a bad thing? And what I mean by that is, okay, like your example of guys being mad they didn't get on the score sheet in a blowout, like that's one thing, that's ego. But isn't it a good thing that players are taking more control away from the owners and the GMs, and controlling their own destinies and controlling their ability to make money and maximize their income? Like, that's not necessarily a bad thing. It comes with some maybe bad sides to it, like the team hopping and stuff. But generally, isn't the fact that younger guys are getting more money a good thing for the players?
No, it's not that aspect. I think that's great. I think the more control the players have, the better. It's good for the game. It's good for the players. I'm all for that. The downside of it is the on ice stuff, to where maybe you won't go as far as you should to win the game. Maybe you're not going to block that shot. Maybe you're not going to go in that corner and get that puck. Maybe there's a 50-50 puck and I don't want to get that puck. And we see it time and time again. It's coming more and more common. Everybody's doing the memes and the clips and the, oh, look at the lack of effort on the back check. Look at the lack of effort on here. Look at that. He could have gotten that puck and he didn't get it. It's becoming more and more common, easier to point out. It's because players are more concerned, and rightfully so. Like, this is their life. I played, and I know how much money can be made. And if I go in for that 50-50 puck in the boards, there's a chance I break my leg. There's a chance I get a concussion. There's a chance I don't come back from that. So it's self-preservation to a point. But at what cost? So I think GMs hopefully are starting to see that, to where, okay, I got a Matthew Tkachuk. This guy played with a broken sternum. I like that. I like that a lot. I have an Austin Matthews. He had a sore wrist and he was out for how many weeks? You know, two very good players, world-class players. Austin Matthews, arguably way more talented. If I'm picking a guy for my team, I'm taking Matthew Tkachuk. If I'm picking a guy for my fantasy league, I'm picking Austin Matthews. That's all I'm saying. And I touched on it earlier in the postseason. If I'm picking a player for the playoffs, my first pick is not going to be Connor McDavid. For all the points he gets, for all the difference he makes, he's a fantastic, like, he's the head and shoulders the best player in the world, Tim. So don't cut this clip for Twitter or Instagram saying, I'm not picking Connor McDavid. He is the best player on the planet, head and shoulders above everybody else. Let's just get that out there. But if I'm picking a player for one game to win, he is not my top five pick. I don't trust him to do the right thing or the hard thing that needs to be done in certain times. I love the player. I would love to have him on the show, but let's just call a spade a spade. The guy's not going to, you know, do the dirty things when it needs to get done. There's numerous clips of him bailing out, and there's a lot of players you can say that for. So he just gets the target on his back because he is the best player on the planet. I'm taking a Sidney Crosby. I'm taking those types of players who still have the skill level, but maybe they are going to go in the corner and get that puck. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but like, you don't want McDavid blocking shots, do you? Like that?
Yes, I do. Hard. Yes, I do.
In the playoffs, maybe, in the Stanley Cup Finals, maybe.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
But like, it's the same in any sport. Do you want Bryce Harper like running out a ground ball to second base in June? Like, it's a chance he pulls a hamstring doing that, with a very low chance percent he gets on base. Like, it's protecting your assets too. And even the example you gave of Tkachuk and Matthews, Tkachuk and Matthews. Like, don't you think that Matthews is playing through his sore wrist in the Stanley Cup Finals the way that Tkachuk did? And don't you think that Tkachuk is taking a few weeks off if he breaks his sternum in the regular season? The little apples to oranges there.
It's apples to apples. If Austin Matthews has a broken sternum in the playoffs, do you think he even attempts to lace him up?
We'll never know.
Yeah. It's a gut feeling. What do you think?
Broken sternum. No.
Do you think he goes the extra mile and has people tie his skates and suit up and then goes out and scores the game winner? Do you think he would do that?
No.
Not a chance.
No.
And that's not a bad thing. Listen, I wouldn't have. I would have pulled the chute way before that. No, I wouldn't have. I would have played. But that's all I'm saying. There are certain players who would, and there are certain players who would not. And the group of players who would not is growing exponentially. It's not getting smaller. Whereas when I was playing, I don't want to sound like a fuddy-duddy, 90% of the guys would have played through that injury. I saw grisly injuries when I was playing, and guys would just say, whatever, shoot me up. Let's go. We got it. We got to win the Stanley Cup. Brian Campbell played through massive injuries, high ankle sprains, this and that. Let's go. And he was a fleet-footed defenseman, and he's just battled through it. Like, high-end guys. Gabrick could barely, like, his leg was falling off. Let's go. We're in the Eastern Conference Finals. We got something to do here. So that's all I'm saying. And all this came from that guy's yard. Just get the lawnmower out. You know what I mean? The grass is like up to my knee. Like, just mow your grass. Pay someone to mow it. Have some ownership, self-respect. I would like to know what goes through a guy's mind when they see clip after clip after clip of them not back-checking, being in the wrong position, because they see it. People comment on our posts all the time. Players like it, players dislike it, thumbs down, thumbs up, all that crap. Players see this stuff. What goes through Austin Matthews' head when there's a huge brawl and he's bailing out? What do you think he thinks about the next day and the day after that, and everybody's going after him?
Which he started, by the way. He started
the brawl. Multiple times. Like, honestly, though, you're closer in age to him than I am. You guys have a lot of the same attributes. What goes through your head when it's like, oh man, everybody's really coming after me?
Similar heights.
Happy with it?
Similar wrist shots. Yeah, I see the comparison.
But do you think he's happy? Do you think he just ignores it? Do you think he's just saying, these guys don't know what they're talking about? They're just trolls. They're just trying to get under my skin.
It's that one. It's just like, oh yeah, it's easy to throw stones, but whatever. Like, you guys have no idea what you're talking about. You haven't been there. You don't know what I've been through. I think it's that.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess it comes with age. It takes a lot to admit that something you're doing is wrong.
Perspective. And
you have to change. Yeah.
Perspective, maturity, time.
That's one thing that I think people, and myself included, it would go a long way. Just realize you're not perfect. You know, learn some stuff. All right, Sam, let's get to all this because I drove by my house. Can you believe it?
You talked a little bit about it last show, seeing it, but clearly it's been weighing on you. It's been over a week and here you are. So,
oh, I did mention it. I wasn't sure if I mentioned it because I've been thinking about it quite a bit.
Tell Danielle.
Just disrespect. She doesn't care. She doesn't care. She's like, why are you driving by there? I just want to see it. Oh, man. So tell it. Like, wrong thing to say at the wrong time. My wife is like the epitome of just wrong thing to say at the worst possible time. We're in La Crosse. I have a trailer. I'm pulling a trailer. I have my big van, Nissan NV350. It's a huge van. There's a red light. I timed it perfectly. So the green goes and I'm gunning through and the lane goes from two lanes to one because they're painting the bridge. The dillweed beside me guns it. Absolutely guns it. So he's not letting me in. And it's a zipper effect. I'm supposed to go. Car in front of him, I go, car behind me. That's the way it's supposed to go. I took a civil engineering class. That's the most efficient way to merge traffic and to keep things moving. Nobody knows it. Everybody backs up and like, no one wants to be the bad guy to go right to the cones and merge in. If there is a two lane to one situation, both lanes drive to the cone, then you zipper effect in. That's the most efficient way to do it. Figure it out, people. Anyways, this guy speeds right up. I almost crashed into the cones. I horn. I want to flip him off, but I can't because my kids are watching. Under my breath, I go, what the heck? And my wife turns to me. She goes, well, what do you expect him to do? I'm like, shut your mouth, please. And I make the motion of stabbing someone in the back and turning the knife. I'm like, you really know how to turn the knife right now, don't you? It's the worst possible time to say this. I'm like, can you just be on my side for one time? One time. And she's like, what? You should have slowed down. I'm like, that's not how it works. That's not how it works. I was so mad. So incredibly mad. And the same thing with the house. I come home. I'm upset. And she's like, why are you driving by there? I told you not to drive by there. I'm like, what? What? I'm like, just shush. Anyways, all right, moving on. Let's get to hockey. That's enough. Is that enough, Tim?
Yeah, that was good. I hope that was therapeutic for you.
You know what else is therapeutic? When I see just the guy that I talked about on the show get traded again. And it's beautiful. The Colorado Avalanche last year signed Alex Galchenyuk to a contract. They thought they could squeeze out a little bit of that talent. And yeah, he played 11 games for them. He got 0 points. He lit it up for the AHL team. I think he got 41 points in 41 games, played really well for their AHL team because he is now an AHL talent. Let's just call a spade. I've said it twice. Well,
0 points, but also -8. You forgot that.
I did. I was trying to be kind to him. He's back in the news. He's going to be a UFA. He gets traded for Ryan Johansson of the Nashville Predators. Big, big, big deal here in my eyes. This is a huge win for the Colorado Avalanche. Nashville has no intention of signing Alex Galchenyuk. I don't even know why he was included in the trade. He is an afterthought at this point. I just think it's funny that he gets traded. The guy is still, he's still getting chances. Do you think Barry Trotz sees this guy and he goes, you know what? I could throw him on the third line. He could put up 20 goals. This is going to be a great addition. We're going to sign him to a league min. Or I don't even know why he's a part of this trade. But anyways, the more important part of this trade, Ryan Johansson, his $8 million salary gets traded to the Colorado Avalanche. 50%, Tim, is being retained by the Nashville Predators. That's a big number. That is a huge number. The Colorado Avalanche are getting a primo centerman who's going to slot in centerman two for $4 million. This is a huge win for the Avalanche. After getting the news that Gabe Landeskog is going to be gone for this coming season, it's a massive, massive win for the Avalanche. They have had depth issues ever since they lost Kadri. This is the biggest trade that's going to happen all off season. This will have ramifications all season and into the playoffs. This puts, in my eyes, the Avalanche back on a path to the Stanley Cup. Am I overselling this, or is this not a huge deal?
It's a pretty big deal. I mean, Ryan Johansson's been a good player in this league for many years now. And he's only 1 year removed. He missed some time last year, but two seasons ago, he had 26 goals and 63 points. This is a really big get for them. I don't understand it from the Predators' point of view. Is it really worth clearing $4 million to get rid of that player? Sure, they've offloaded a lot of contracts in the last 18 months or so. But for Colorado, yeah, this is big. This is really, really big. They've been missing that since Kadri's been out, especially with Landeskog's injury. I don't know if it's automatic, like, cup level again. I don't know if he has that big of an impact, but it's pretty solid.
Yeah, I think Nashville's full-on rebuild. They got rid of Tanner Janot. They got rid of Ryan Johansson and a couple other guys that can't.
Ryan Ellis.
A lot of high-end guys. So they're in full rebound mode here. Rebuild mode, excuse me. Now it just begs the question, what do you do with UC Saros? Like, is he gone now? He's going to be a UFA after next season. His value is pretty high right now. So Nashville, keep an eye on them because they are they're sell, sell, sell. I like this for Colorado. I like it for Nashville too. They realize they're not going to be a contending team for a long time. Let's just hit the reset button. I love what they're doing. I love what the Philadelphia Flyers are doing. There's no expectations of winning. We are going to rebuild. We're going to get draft picks. Nashville has two first round draft picks this year. They have a bunch of draft picks in the next two or three years coming up. They're not playing games with anybody. It's like, we're a bad hockey team. We're going to rebuild through the draft. We're going to rebuild through our prospect system. We're not going to try to sign any big name free agents. This is it. This is our team. Another team that seems to be in the rebuild every single year, but keeps trading for decent players. I don't understand what's happening in Arizona. Arizona acquired Sean Durzi from the LA Kings. They give up a second round draft pick. They get Durzi, who is a good defenseman. Is this the start of the rebuild for the Arizona Coyotes? Because I like this move for them. I really do. Sean Durzi is a good player.
It's a solid move, but I think it has more to do with LA. They wanted to clear some room off their books to get $1.7 million for Durzi's contract. And it feels like they're setting up for something bigger, which we'll talk about next. But yeah, he's a solid young defenseman. I was surprised they moved him, and pretty good pickup for Arizona.
Yeah, 24-year-old defenseman, been in the league for a few years now. He got 38 points last year, 27 his rookie year. So the guy he's a player. So for the Arizona Coyotes, getting rid of Jacob Chychrun, obviously having to deal with the franchise, where are we going to play this and that? This is a win. For as many losses that they can chalk up, which are numerous, like, they lead the league in losses, not just, you know, on ice, off the ice too. They just can't do anything right. This is a win. I think they win this trade. The second round draft pick is theoretically a player who doesn't make the NHL. Sean Durzi will be a good defenseman in the NHL for the next 10 years. They can get him under cap. He's still under team control next year. So good for the Arizona Coyotes. I bag on them a lot, rightfully so. I wanted to show some good work. This is a good trade. I like what Billy Armstrong did. So good for him. They're going to have a good defenseman in Arizona for the years to come after losing Jacob Chychrun. All right, what else, Tim?
Yeah, so we mentioned the LA Kings setting up for something else. The big name right now is Pierre-Luc Dubois, who asked for a trade from Winnipeg, and they've been working on a deal all weekend long. Still hasn't happened. Kind of conflicting reports out there, so it's not quite sure exactly what the deal is, but the report is that LA is trying to work out an extension with him. And then another report came out that they haven't been able to talk to him, and that's the holdup on the deal. So not totally sure, but most likely is he goes to LA, and they sign him to a long-term contract, and they get their big top six center.
Yeah, the names being bantered about from LA would be Alex Iafallo, Gabe Vilardi, maybe a draft pick, and PLD, Pierre-Luc Dubois, going to LA. Obviously, everybody knew he wanted to go to Montreal. He was raised there. He speaks French. Everything works out there. I don't think Montreal just has a space for him. There's just a lot of forwards in Montreal. There's just not a lot of room for him to fit in there. But if you look at the LA roster, you look at the way they're built, this is a pretty big win for them. If he goes to LA, boy, oh boy, they had a good season last year. They were obviously in a minor rebuild mode. They brought in Kevin Fiala. They have Philip Deneau. Kempe took a big step forward last year. Does this all of a sudden, Tim, push them closer to the Edmonton Oilers category in that division, the Colorado Avalanche status, the Vegas Golden Knights status, or are they still, in your eyes, maybe just a step below? They still have Drew Doughty on contract for another 4 years. That's a bad deal. I don't know. Where does this put them? If they can pull this off and get a Pierre-Luc Dubois, who was legit, he's a 1C. Like, he is a great player. For all the off-ice stuff that he has, for all the drama that's followed him throughout his career, where does this put them if they get Pierre-Luc Dubois, Tim?
Well, it depends on what they have to give up for him, for sure. But yeah, I mean, this is it's interesting because you've got Kopitar and Deneau, right? And they were able to shut down Connor McDavid and Draisaitl as best they could, but you're still losing six to Edmonton Oilers. I don't know how much better they do against Vegas or Dallas or Colorado in those matchups, but you add a Pierre-Luc Dubois and all of a sudden you've got a little bit more offensive punch. You've got more depth down the middle, which I know is important to you. So yeah, this is a big major step for them.
Love it. Yeah, it would, I think they would have to make some moves on the wings. You have Kempe, you have Arvidsson, losing Iafallo and Vilardi. Those are big pieces. They're huge for them. They you know, play the power play, second, third line, right wing. So they're good players. Not like you're giving up prospects or guys who are on the bottom half of their career. They're very valuable pieces to be trading, but you're getting a good young centerman who is going to put up 70, 80 points, play that second line center role. You can drop Philip Deneau down to that third line center role. Quentin Byfield, maybe you shift him to the wing. Who knows? There's a lot of pieces that can move around there in LA, and it doesn't hurt to add a really good player. Like, Pierre-Luc Dubois is good, as much as I just don't like him personally because he's a dirtbag. Like, let's just get it all out there. All the drama that he's had with John Tortorella, all the drama that he's having right now with the Winnipeg Jets. I don't want to be here. I don't want to play here.
Not 2 weeks ago, I asked about this and you said you don't blame him because look at where he's been and the teams he's been on. Who wouldn't request trades from those teams at this point? What changed?
I just don't like him. I don't. Maybe it's his French name. I don't know. But he seems to have drama follow him wherever he goes. He's almost like the Tony D'Angelo of forwards, where everywhere he goes, there's just a little bit of drama that goes with him. And I don't blame him. But if I was in those situations, I wouldn't complain like he did. I would just quietly go about my business and hopefully things would change. That's not what he did. He aired his laundry publicly. I don't like when people do that. I don't blame him for doing it. It obviously worked. And now he gets to go to LA potentially, where the sun is just shining all day long and the women flock like the rivers of Capistrano. Is that how the saying goes? The salmon?
Yeah, you lost me on that one.
The Dumb and Dumber.
Oh, where the beer flows like wine?
Like the women of Capistrano.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe. All right, moving on. Your Bruins connection here. Torrey Krug, former Bruins, just stud, goes to St. Louis and just has a massive drop off in his play. Yes, due to injury, maybe the culture. Things have not worked out well for Torrey Krug in St. Louis. We can just say that. His name is being bounced around in trade rumors with the Philadelphia Flyers. Danny Briere is continuing to revamp this team, and I love it. He's getting rid of everybody. There are trades in the works. Nothing has come through fully, but they've been working hard. St. Louis and Philly are have a trade almost done, Tim. What's the issues here? Why can't they pull the trigger on this trade?
Yeah, the report over the weekend was that the trade was imminent between these two teams, and some accounts even said the deal was done, but obviously it hasn't been. And the major kind of holdup is that Torrey Krug won't waive his no-move clause to go to Philadelphia. Doesn't want to be in Philly. And the part of the package was Kevin Hayes going to St. Louis, as well as Travis Sanheim. And I think Briere wanted the Blues to eat some of Krug's contract too. So I don't know exactly what's going to happen there. It doesn't sound like a deal is going to happen. I think they still want to offload Hayes, and there is interest in Hayes in St. Louis, but I don't think it's going to involve Krug. It's probably a smaller deal than originally anticipated.
Yeah, I like Krug. I think there's still some good hockey left in this kit. And surprisingly, he makes a very reasonable salary. He makes $6.5 million. So I don't think that's an obscene amount for a player of his ilk. If you could put him in the right situations, maybe put him on the 3-4 pairing. Don't put him against the other team's top line. Protect him a little bit. He can be in the first power play unit. The guy's a good player. Like, you, if he's healthy, you can lock him in for 45, 50 points all day long. And he's proven he can do it in the playoffs. He's a good player. Do I blame him for not wanting to go to Philly? Nobody wants to go to Philly, even with regime change, even with everything that's being sold there. The team still is coached by John Tortorella. Like, let's not forget about this. This is a team that's going to be bag skated weekly. I don't care how much they say they're rebuilding, how much they say they're going to, you know, have patience with the team. This is going to take a long time. You think Torts is going to be okay with losing? You think he's going to wake up and go, okay, you know what? We're rebuilding. It's okay. He's going to skate this team into the ground. And Torrey Krug is a 34-year-old veteran who has a no move clause. He's not going to go there without the assurance that they're going to flip him to a team that has a Stanley Cup potential. And I think that's what's holding this up right now. He wants to have some assurance that if he okays this trade, Danny Briere is going to trade him to a contender. That's all. Until that happens, there will be no deals done. I think Danny will do it, Briere, but I don't know how you put that in writing. You can't like guarantee someone they're going to trade them because trades fall through all the time and then it doesn't happen. But we'll see. This would be a good trade for both teams. I think getting Kevin Hayes out of Philadelphia into St. Louis, a market that I think he would excel in. He's a big body forward. He goes into the, you know, places that are hard to play. He would excel in St. Louis. St. Louis still, do you think they still have Tim a little bit of meat on the bone of contention? They have decent players. You have Jordan Kyrou, you have Shen, you have Thomas, you have like a Brandon Saad, the back end, the names are there. The play has not been up to the names, the Justin Falks, the Parenkos, the Nick Lettys. Like those are some good names. Then you got the doofus on the between the pipes, Jordan Binnington. Is there any possibility St. Louis, with the addition of Kevin Hayes, can compete next year?
Compete, sure. And Justin Falk had a great season last year. He had 50 points. He was leading the team at one point, like halfway through the year. The question is Binnington. Like, what are you going to get out of him? And he's gotten worse. We talked about this. He got worse every single year consecutively since winning the cup in 2019. Like, he just keeps getting worse. And then the antics are getting out of control. So I think they look at maybe if they want to make some moves and if they think Kevin Hayes makes them a better team, I think you look at a different solution between the pipes. Maybe there's a buyout. Maybe you see if someone wants to take a risk on Binnington and you bring in a goalie who's looking for a change, like a Hellebuck who's asked for a trade. Like maybe UC Saros becomes on the market, like you said. But yeah, I think Kevin Hayes doesn't make them a better team, but Binnington really limits their potential.
I agree. What's going on with Tony DeAngelo, Tim?
DeAngelo. Briere is actively shopping him as well. Reportedly back to Carolina. Again, one of those things where the deal seemed imminent and then it kind of fell through. Not a lot of insight on this one. There was a snag here. Maybe there was thought of a salary retention or a pick coming the other way and it didn't work out. So I think he probably still ends up going to Carolina where he played really well several years ago, but not quite yet.
It's comical what's happened with Tony. I'm not going to say, I can't say his last name. It's comical. The Flyers paid a pretty penny to get him. Couple, you know, draft picks. They signed him to a $5 million contract over 2 years, $10 million. They invested a lot in this guy and he played well. He just didn't jive. He didn't figure it out. He Pierre-Luc Dubois'd his way out of Philadelphia. So at this point, if Carolina does get him back, they are massive winners in this trade. And that's kind of looking like it's going to happen. He's going to go back to Carolina. I like this move. I like Tony. He's a good player. I think if he just shut his mouth and played hockey, he would be a perennial all-star. The guy does nothing but go out there and put points on the board. He's a swift skating 5'11", 6' defenseman. He's not terrible in the defensive zone, Tim. He's not awful. He almost is very similar to Torrey Krug, where if you give him an opportunity and he plays a full season, he's going to get you 55 points. Like that's the type of player he is. In Carolina, he was great in the playoffs last year. Like he was really good. He was running their power play one. He was all over the place. He played fantastic. So I don't know. I hope he goes back to Carolina. Give him a chance. He was healthy scratched this year, for Pete's sake. He was healthy scratched in Philadelphia. It doesn't make sense to me. Just because he's, you know, voices his opinion a little bit. Let the guy play. All right. Moving on from one franchise who was just completely selling everybody to another franchise who was trying to keep everybody, but nobody wants to play there. All these guys, they were a Stanley Cup contender. 2 years ago. They went out, they won the offseason, they lost their best two players, they bring in two players who are going to fill those cracks, and then some. With Nazem Kadri, Jonathan Huberdeau, they added Mackenzie Weegar, everything was great. Last season was awful. It reminded me of when I went to San Jose. They were supposed to be Stanley Cup contenders, and it was just a train wreck. Everybody sucked. They traded everybody. They got rid of the coach. It was just a disaster. The same thing happened to Calgary last year. It was awful. Daryl Sutter's gone. New regime comes in, new head coach, new GM. Everything's going to change. The players are supposed to want to stay, Tim, right? That's what's supposed to happen. You got rid of the bad egg, which was the coach. Nobody really liked the GM, Brad Treveeling. He's gone. All this was done to appease the players. Why does nobody want to resign? What is happening in Calgary, Tim? What's going on there?
Well, okay, obviously, like you mentioned, you've got to take it in context with the bigger picture of last year, too, where Tkachuk forces a trade because he doesn't want to be there anymore. And Johnny Gaudreau takes less money on the open market because he doesn't want to be there anymore. And then Frank Saravelli, friend of the show, sent out a series of tweets over the weekend that just devastated the entire province of Alberta. First one here, I'm going to read them in order. First one here, Calgary recently made a big pitch, rolled out the red carpet to try to sign Elias Lindholm. Calgary's waiting on a response, but a Lindholm and haven't given a definitive answer yet. General league speculation, he's leaning toward not re-signing with Calgary. That's the first tweet. One C center they have right now. Second one, the belief is the Flames have received a more direct answer from defenseman Noah Hanifin, who has clearly indicated that he does not plan to sign an extension in Calgary. Finally, bit of a surprise, told Michael Backlund is also leaning toward not re-signing in Calgary. All these players are under contract for this coming year. They have one more year left on their deal. And then another one came in the next day from Frank, not to throw another log into the fire for the Flames, but the potential exodus continues. I'm told Tyler Toffoli also plans on not re-signing in Calgary. These are your, what, four of your top six wingers, the other two you just, forwards, the other two you just signed last year with Huberdeau and Kadri. Like, what is Huberdeau thinking right now, looking around like, guys, where are you going? Where are you going? Why don't you want to be here anymore? So on top of that, not as big a deal as the others, but Milan Lucic is not coming back either. He's hitting the free agency this summer, this week. So.
Yeah, I think the biggest deal is Hanifin. I mean, he is a fantastic defenseman. The guy plays on the second power play unit. And he kills penalties. He is on their first defensive unit with Rasmus Anderson. That's a big one. Like, it's huge. It's one thing to lose Elias Lindholm. He's your 1C center. He's fantastic. Everybody knows it. But Noah Hanifin, he's 26-year-old stud, Tim. Like, stud. And I can just imagine the money they're throwing at him right now. If they're trying to re-sign him, like, those numbers are in the $8, $9 million a year range. That's what I would assume they're offering him. He's 26. He's in the prime of his career. You can lock him in for 30, 40 points. He can shut down the other team's top line. He's a great defenseman. And if he's just saying to your face, you know, I'm done. I don't like it here. I'm sorry. So it's almost a blessing. These guys are just being upfront, saying, I'm not coming back. No, they're not going to lead the team on. They're not going to play games and try to get more money and just the new GM, Craig Conroy, they're going to toy with them a little bit and try to get $10 million instead of $9 million. No, they're just saying no. Tyler Toffoli's been around the block. He's a Stanley Cup champion. He's 31 years old. He knows what he wants. And he's saying, I'm not coming back here. This ain't it, guys. We don't have it here. I think this is a good thing. Yes, it looks bad on paper. Yes, it looks bad with Frank Saravelli tweeting all this stuff. Oh, this one and that one and him and him and him. This is a good thing in my eyes. You got a new GM. You got a new coach coming in. Just a failed season last year. An absolute crap season. Let's just start all over. We have good players. Jonathan Huberdeau's a good player. As much as I think he's a baby, as much as I think he just is entitled brat, and he's never going to live up to this $10.5 million contract. We can all agree on that. He's a good player. You can build around him. He's 30 years old. He's still got some gas left in the tank. Nazem Kadri, good player. $7 million. That's a good contract for him. You can build around him. You have some good pieces on the back end. Mackenzie Weegar, he's good. Rasmus Anderson, he's good. We can build around those guys. Let's get rid of some of the guys who have been here a long time. Good. We can go out. We can get some prospects for Elias Lindholm. We can get some guys for Tyler Toffoli. We can get some guys for Michael Backlund. We can get a lot of guys for Noah Hanifin. Just go. Embrace it. Full rebuild. They tried last year to just turn back the clock, and we lost some good players, and we're going to try to rebuild on the fly, and we're going to compete. It didn't work. It didn't work. You have to reset now. These guys aren't coming back. Like you said, Tim, these are four of your top six forwards. Backlund, Lindholm, Toffoli are huge for you. They're huge. And if they're not coming back, you have no chance of winning. You don't. So let's just pivot and figure out something else we have to do. Go out and get a bunch of good young prospects, get a bunch of high first round draft picks, and we'll see what we can do. The scary part is Craig Conroy is a first year GM. Is he going to do the right things? Is he going to be able to just get good assets for these really, really good players like Brad Treveling did? He did well trading Gaudreau and Tkachuk. He did well. I don't know, but I don't mind this. It looks bad on paper. Calgary wasn't going to win this year. They weren't going to win anything. Huberto's not that guy. You know, he's not. He's a second line left right wing. He's not going to be your first line. Yeah, I don't want him on my first line.
He had 115 points last year. He's not a second line player. I can understand he's not the most important.
Last year he had 115?
Last calendar year. Whatever. I mean.
Yeah, he had 55 points last year. He's a second line right winger.
Do you think which player is he of those two? He's not either of them, right? I mean,
falls somewhere in the 70 point range. That's it. That's his.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's where he's going to live. Listen, much like Connor McDavid, if I'm banking on him in the playoffs to do the right thing and to produce and to come through in the clutch moments, I don't think I have a ring on my finger. I don't know. So what? I don't want him on my first line in the playoffs there, but he makes 10 and a half. So that's a bad contract. It's a bad contract. All right, moving on, Tim. What are we going to do?
A couple of contract extensions as well. Eric Halla signed with the Devils 3 years at 3.15. It's a really
great deal.
Great value.
Great deal. I don't know how does this happen? Let's just touch on that. Players are overpaid daily. Eric Halla is such a good player, and he's had this weird career where he's just kind of bounced around from team to team and almost been like a hired assassin at the trade line. He's gone from Minnesota to Vegas to Carolina to Florida to Nashville to Boston to New Jersey. He always gets traded. He always produces. Everywhere he goes, he does well in the playoffs. He's usually on the third line, doesn't get much power play time if it is. It's second unit. He puts up points. You know what I mean? He's good for a point in every other game. And he gets this type of money. I don't understand who his agent is. I think it's my former agent, Ben Hankinson. But it's a great contract for New Jersey. I like it. I think Eric Halla probably wanted some term. And 3 years is a good number for him at a 32 years of age. So, gosh, it just seems low. The guy's going to put up 50 points next year, 60 points. And he's going to make 3.15. Good for New Jersey. I like that contract. That GM there is doing, he's doing some really good work. Yeah, good for them. All right. What else?
Agreed. Sean Monahan signed a 1 year, $1.985 million extension with Montreal. And then Jordan Staal, captain of the Hurricanes, signed a 4 year deal, averaging $2.9 million. Also a pretty good number though, although he's a bit older. But he does.
How the mighty have fallen with Sean Monahan. Man, he was making some do-re-mi 6.5 with Calgary. Now he's like 1.9. That's ahead. That's a weird signing for Montreal too. I don't know. I don't know if I like that one for them. But what's the other one you're talking about? Jordan Staal.
Yeah. Yeah, talked on that one already. Also, we had the Hockey Hall of Fame class of 2023 announced last week. Did you catch this one?
Just goalies everywhere. Lots of goalies. I did. Who's going in, Tim?
Henrik Lundqvist, Tom Barrasso, Pierre Turgeon, Mike Vernon, Caroline Ouellette, Ken Hitchcock, and Pierre Lacroix.
It's Turgeon.
What did I say?
Turgeon. Let's just get the names right.
Okay. Okay.
I like it. I think they're all great hockey players. I don't really know the stats off the top of my head, but it seems like the one that's, you know, obviously first ballot is Hank. He's a lock. But Tom Barrasso, he won a bunch of cups with the Penguins, right? And then Pierre Turgeon, big visor. That's what I remember for him. Mike Vernon, he won that cup with the Flames, right? 1980, I believe. You're just a baby. You don't. Caroline Ouellette, she won a bunch of gold medals with Canada. Good for them. That's exciting. There's a there's a couple big names on the ballot for next year, 2024. I just want to get your outright hall or not on all these guys.
Okay.
Marlowe.
Yes.
Pavel Datsyuk.
Yes.
Pekka Rinne.
No.
Mikko Koivu.
No.
Ryan Miller.
No.
Ilya Kovalchuk.
No.
What? Oh, man. You are such a hypocrite. It's crazy.
Why am I a hypocrite?
Ilya Kovalchuk, you're the one who goes to bat for all these KHL stats up and down. They should count. They should count. If you put his stats fully, KHL and NHL, the guy's like a hands-down first ballot Hall of Famer.
Do you think that Bettman and crew are going to reward him for leaving in his prime with a Hall of Fame ballot?
Listen, I'm just stating it as I see it.
You asked me if I was going to get in.
But you're undermining yourself.
I'm not, first of all, I'm not. Was my argument that he's going to be a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, because of his stats in the KHL should count.
That was 2 years ago, John. I've evolved. I've grown. Pavel Datsyuk, by the way, I watched the highlight video of him again. He's just incredible. He's my favorite player of all time. He was just so good.
Did everybody notice how Tim just changed the subject so fast?
It's the same subject. It's the list of players. Okay. What would you like to say about Kovalchuk?
I don't think he should make the Hall of Fame because the only stats that matter are the ones in the NHL.
It's the Hockey Hall of Fame.
You're right. The best hockey. I play men's league.
Caroline Ouellette didn't play in the NHL.
She didn't have the opportunity. Female hockey player. Different. That's fine for me. She played at the highest level possible for women. The Olympics.
So did Kovalchuk.
She excelled. He did not play in the NHL very long.
Yes, he did. He played most of his career.
Jumped ship and went to the KHL. So you take his NHL stats and you take his Olympic stats, and if that's good enough for the Hall of Fame, then yes. And I don't know, maybe they are.
Yeah, I think I'm changing my answer. I think he is in the Hall of Fame. The Hockey Hall of Fame.
It is. But do you take all the stats from the Swedish Elite League? Do you take all the stats from the Finnish League? Do you go to Italy and take all those stats? When does it end?
You understand how the difference between the KHL...
I don't.
And the Italy League, is that what you said?
Yeah, the Swedish Elite League is very good.
It's very good, yeah. But it's mostly young players, isn't it?
I don't know. There's older guys who play there. So he jumped ship from the Devils in 2012, and he played 6 years in the KHL. He put up massive points, won championships. Do you take those 300 points, 344 points, and add them onto his NHL totals to... It puts him in 1,400 points.
I'm remembering
which is a
now.
Hall of Fame career.
I understand that you don't. Okay, I understand that NHL points are probably weighed the heaviest. But he went to the. I mean, what's the second best league in the world? Is it the AHL? Would you say?
And I'd then say the KHL. KHL. Yeah, K. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's say the KHL. One, I think. And now I'm remembering. He won two championships, one of which he was the MVP for. Yeah, this is a first ballot. Maybe not first ballot, but he's a Hockey Hall of Famer. You have to. You have to.
No, you don't. I don't feel.
What's the argument against him?
He didn't play in the best league.
He did for most of his career. He played in the best league.
Yeah, but he left. And so if you just take his NHL totals, he got 876 points. That's it.
And how many games?
926. So not even a point per game guy. Never won anything in the playoffs. That's it. I don't think he gets into the hall or should get into the hall. He did well internationally. Like he put up some good points in the Olympics and this and that, but I just don't like it.
Is Patrick Marleau a Hall of Famer?
This gets into the sentimentality of it where he did set the games played record. My heart says yes, but my mind says no. I feel like R. Kelly.
Canceled.
He's canceled. What did he do?
To look it up. I'm not going to talk about it. you see,
all right. Of that list that I mentioned, the only ones that are surefire in for me are Datsyuk and Miller. I think Miller makes it in hands down.
He got voted into the Michigan Sports Hall of Fame last week.
Yeah, he makes it in. He's the all-time winning goaltender for Americans. He won everywhere he went. He played on bad teams and still succeeded. He played well, and he's got multiple like Vezinas. The guy's played. He won the Vezina Trophy, only one, 2009, 2010. But he makes it in Datsyuk for obvious reasons. The guy's just the best hands who have ever laced him up. But maybe Marleau, Rene, and Koivu, hard no. That's all it is.
Koivu's not even really in the conversation. I don't know why.
I don't know. He's just one of those guys who played one team his whole career. Actually, he did go to Columbus right at the end of his career, but he was my first captain. Oh, captain, my captain, Miku Koivu. What a head of hair on him, too. Those Finns have great hair. I don't know what it is, but they all have the same haircut, parted on the hard left right across, and they're all blonde. Antti Miettinen, Pekka Rene, Miku Koivu, they all have the same hair.
Rantanen, same thing.
Yeah, it does he? That's funny. All right, what else?
Some quick hits here. Oliver Ekman-Larsson was bought out by Vancouver, so he's going to cost them not much this year, but I think $4 million next year, and averaging about $3 million per year against the cap over the next 5 years, and a little bit, not much, but a little bit on Arizona's as well.
That might go down as the worst trade ever in history when they got Garland and Oliver Ekman-Larsson from Arizona. Another win for Arizona. Such a bad trade. I don't know why. This is it. This is going to be the trade. We're going to win a Stanley Cup after this. They didn't even make the playoffs the next year. It's just the effects of that trade are long lasting, and they will be for a long time thanks to this trade. He's going to be on the cap for 5 more years, Tim. It's crazy. Where does he go that's going to make a difference, do you think?
Do you think he can still be a top 4 defenseman somewhere?
No. I think he is now transitioned to a Keith Yandel type, where he is a power play specialist and you play him 12 minutes a game and he gets 30, 40 power play points a year. And that's it. You play him against the other team's third or fourth line, but he's on the first power play unit. He cannot be relied upon to be a defenseman. He can't. When I played with him in Arizona, that was his best year statistically, by the way. He was very good in the defensive zone. He made a good first pass. He was back to the puck very quickly. He was good. It's fallen off. I don't know if he's just gotten injured. He doesn't want to go back for the puck anymore. He doesn't look like he's interested in the D zone. That's the way it looked in Vancouver. But you shield him a little bit. You play him against not high-end talent, and he's still a very good defenseman. Like, he's got a heck of a shot from the point. He's got patience. He can be valuable to a team. And it's nice that he's making $3 million off the books for anybody. So if you're a team, you can say, hey, we'll give you $1 million. You're still making $4 million a year. Like, let's go. So I think he's very valuable. Very, very. Wouldn't surprise me if he went to Colorado or a Boston, a contender.
Pittsburgh. Yep. I think he goes there and makes a little bit of money. And I think even if you put him in the top four and pair him with a big-bodied, defensive, responsible guy like Brian Dumoulin, maybe there's some money to be made there.
Not going to win in Pittsburgh. All right, what's next?
The San Jose Sharks have hired friend of the show, Patrick Marleau. You're going to love this one. Player development coach and hockey operations advisor.
Oof. That's a nameplate on the door. Holy moly. Extra characters.
We got to get him or Sharp on the show and explain what these titles mean.
Good for him. Like, that's the biggest business card I've ever seen. Player development coach and hockey operations advisor. It's so dumb. It's so jealous. So dumb. Why not just say the title of my job is to come and drink beer at the games and hang around the team because fans like me. That's it. That's all it is.
Did this title exist when you were in the league?
No.
Like a new thing.
Well, it you know who developed it, as far as I know, was the Chicago Blackhawks. So they had bad fan relations back when I was there. They started to bring in the old players. And the fans loved it. And they would give them titles like this. So hockey operations advisor, this and that. And then every team after that I played for, San Jose had Mike Ricci. I'd go to Arizona and there'd be guys kicking around. I'd go to these teams and there'd be always players kicking around. And they'd collect the paycheck and they were just there. At the games, they'd go walk around and shake hands and kiss babies and this and that. It's evolved over the time because, I don't know, teams are more aware that fans want more out of their experience. They can maybe just sit home or just be on their phones. They need to engage the fans more. And so they have these guys on the payroll. And that's all it is. Patty Marleau, will have to go to 25 home games next year. He'll have to sign autographs at five of them. He'll have to do a couple interviews between the intermission. This is what it is. He's going to live in San Jose. He's going to make $150,000, and it's going to be easy as pie. Patty doesn't drink, but this is what his job is. Oh, I would love to do something like that. Absolutely. I would love it. I didn't stay on a team long enough. I was bouncing around too much. I was so wanted. Every free agency period was like a bidding war for me.
If it was going to be a team, it would probably be Buffalo, right? That would hire you for that.
I would think so. Them or Chicago. I'm very well liked in both of those markets because I loved being there. So we'll see. We'll wait on that. We'll wait, Tim.
Okay. We knew this was coming, but officially confirmed, the salary cap set for the new year is $83.5 million, which I believe is $1 million increase, which is what we thought, right?
It's big. It's huge. The game is growing, leaps and bounds. Like, it's insane how big this game is growing. Did you see, by the way, the rankings for the playoffs?
The TV ratings?
TV ratings, yeah. Atrocious. Remind me.
Yeah,
absolutely atrocious. The final round, Stanley Cup Finals, the one everyone's supposed to be watching, 50% less viewership from the year before. Awful. Absolutely awful for the NHL. Good luck getting big money brands to buy into the game.
But how much of that is the league's fault versus just small market teams making it to the finals?
Small market teams, yeah. But you can still market it. Man, I still blame Gary.
Yeah.
You're like my wife. Worst possible timing.
What do you expect him to do, John?
All right. What are we finishing off here with?
Yeah, we got the NHL awards tonight in Nashville. This is where the Vezina and the Conn Smythe, but the Selke and all those trophies will be announced.
You say the worst trophy, Selke. No one cares about the Selke except for you. Because Patrice Bergeron's won it like a million times.
Who's not going to be there tonight, but he'll win it. He should win it.
Actually, you know what? There has been a rumor. Speaking of Patrice Bergeron, his replacement, if rumors are true, it's very exciting. Shifley. There's been little birdies have been telling me. I'm somewhat of a Winnipeg insider. And the Bruins are kicking the tires of Mark Shifley, especially if Bergeron and Krejci not coming back. Imagine if they got Shifley, Tim. How exciting would that be?
It would be pretty exciting. He's a good player. I mean, obviously, we want those guys, but the rumor, the latest report indicates that Bergeron and Krejci are not coming back. I would love Scheifele.
So,
legit 1C.
These are the dominoes that I've heard. Hellebuck out, Allmark or Swayman to Winnipeg to replace Hellebuck for Scheifele.
It'll be Allmark. We wouldn't get rid of Swayman.
No, just because he's a friend of the show.
Exactly. No,
I like it.
Age, contract, everything.
All right. Big awards question. Does Carlson win the Norris?
Who's he up against again? Makar and Yossi?
Does he win the Norris? Answer the question.
Yes.
Oh, gosh, I hope he doesn't. I hope he doesn't, but he will. It's going to be depressing. But yes, everybody, watch the awards. We'll be back on Friday because Tim's apparently driving somewhere. I want to go Wednesday and Friday, but Tim doesn't want to. He wants the summer schedule to start. So,
yes, with the big week, though, we got the draft starting Wednesday and that'll go into Thursday. And then we have free agency starting on the first, which I think is Saturday or Sunday. So big week coming up. Maybe Thursday, John. Maybe Thursday morning. I'll let you know.
If you find time, that'd be nice.
I'll try to work it in. We'll see.
Okay. All right, everybody. Well, thank you for listening. We appreciate the support and we'll talk to you guys at some point this week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.